And yes, it is indeed Off Planet Radio, but it's not Off Planet Radio, the show tonight. It is Man Talk 6 on Off Planet Radio. I'm Randy Moggins, and in the background here, I have with me my two esteemed guests, actually co-hosts. But I don't know how to define all these roles we have, but what the heck. It is basically a concept of three talk show hosts getting together and tossing around issues of the day, things that are important in life and stuff. And it is the first day of spring here in the Western Hemisphere. I suspect it's a different down where Vinny is. It's still cold, and it is also International Extraterrestrial Abduction Day. I didn't know this. I was driving home from work tonight, and our local public radio station was playing really weird music, UFO music. And I'm like, what's going on? And they said, it's International Extraterrestrial Abduction Day. It appears this started at a festival in Toronto several years ago. And so now it's officially somewhere, somehow, International Extraterrestrial Abductions Day. That in itself is so creepy that I have nowhere else to go with a monologue, so I bring up my guest from...
I have a joke that goes with that.
You have a joke that goes with that? This is... okay, great. Jump right in, Vinny.
How do aliens repair their damaged spacecraft?
I have no idea.
With abduct tape.
That would be the voice of, he is the RoboCop of Gonzo Media, and our good friend Vinny Eastwood is here with me from north of me in Canada, also known as America North. He's the truth warrior, David Whitehead. Good evening.
Hey, guys, what's happening? Glad to be here.
And this is the maiden voyage of Man Talk Project on Off Planet Radio on SpreakerRadio.com. We did one live broadcast about 3 weeks ago, and it was difficult to say the least, but we'll see how it goes tonight. There are social media things that I'm still trying to work through. We are broadcasting live on Spreaker.com. We're also on Facebook and over at offplanetmedia.net. And there are some people in the chat room there. I will monitor as much as I can the various web pages. And so, guys, it's been a long time since we've done this. The last time we were supposed to do this was in November. And I commenced into my dark soul of the night and got ill and took several months to recuperate. And so in the meantime, we sort of put the show on hiatus. But it's good to have you both back. The way this all began, for the listeners who don't know, is that I was scheduled to appear on Vinny Eastwood's show. And so was David. We got double booked. And so in a moment of... insane brilliance, we concocted this idea that this would be a format for a talk show, and we've been kind of pursuing it ever since. The concept is basically rotating between each one of our shows, and each host would host it, and then we do this like once a month. Well, we'll see how that goes, because, you know, schedules and things like that sometimes have a way of just completely screwing with your mind. Guys, give us an update on where you've been, what's been going on with both of you. Let's start with Vincent, because he, well, he's become an honest man.
Hmm. I've become an honest man. Is that what happens when you get
married? That's the American, yeah, that's what Americans say anyway.
Well, how come there's a 52% divorce rate in America then?
See, look, he's already honest enough to share the true statistics.
Well, you know, marriage is an institution, isn't it? You know, and just like any other institution, like law or doctor or anything like that, it's been corrupted in the mainstream while there's a really actual, brilliant, real thing that exists that barely anybody ever sees in the sitcoms or TV shows or anything like that, because they're just not that interesting, you know? It's not interesting unless there's huge quantities of conflict and terrible things going on between each other. But, you know, real life ain't like that. It's not entertaining if you're having fights and everything with each other. It's actually really sad. And you got to learn how to get over that sometimes. And hopefully, if you're very lucky, like me, you'll find someone who loves you, like really, really loves you, and will put up with all of your BS, know that you're going to say sorry after you've done something stupid or whatever. Basically, you accept all of their faults, they accept all of yours, and you agree to work on them together. That's what marriage is.
What do you say after that? In a lot of ways, though, the flip side of all of that is that there's a merging of strengths and weaknesses, and the ideal is counterbalance of each other's differences. So that is actually a very long process of growing together, the idea that it's the twin soul, the male-female aspect. And so, you know, the strong side of that is that you're now a complete human being, having completed your soul half.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, how does a double helix work? You know, you got two rafts of the human genome code going up along one side, and they both twist and turn around on each other. And without one another, you'd be useless. I'm not saying that all single people are useless, but you know, far from it, especially for prowling bachelors. But the other element here is it's about wholeness, about completeness. If you don't have a true, deep, meaningful relationship with your significant other, you feel empty. Sometimes you get lonely. Other times you enjoy the freedoms that you have of being single and what have you. But you grow to appreciate what you have rather than appreciate what you're missing out on.
Yeah. David, do you want to weigh
in? And it's also, that's great, because it's also that when you're entering into a relationship with somebody else, you're in a situation where you can either choose to give love or to try to take love. And of course, it has to be a balanced thing where it's actually something that's shared. And I find it's interesting about the concept. And I mean, we use that word love, and there's a lot of connotations that go with that. I think we've covered this before, but basically where there's the idea of just this sort of blindless reliance on somebody else to be the one to fulfill that emptiness for you, as opposed to being a holistic, balanced individual on your own. And hopefully you can link up with someone that is also a holistic, balanced individual. And then you're now sharing that frequency or that expression of consciousness and energy that we call like true love. But when you hear what's coming out from, you know, pop music and sort of the pop culture industry, they've literally created an industry out of love, and they've created this whole fabricated expression of that, which is that you have to go and find somebody to complete you, and you need to, you're nothing without it. And you hear all the songs, you're like, I'm nothing without you. But it should be more about I'm everything, and I'm expressing the wholeness of my being when I'm around you, because our relationship is giving me the opportunity to connect to the deeper aspects of myself that maybe I can't see on my own. So in a way, there's a sort of a student-teacher relationship that has to take place, and that has to keep working simultaneously back and forth. So that's just my view on it. And I think that when people are pursuing a relationship of any kind, whether it's a romantic or intimate relationship on that level, or whether it's just a friendship-type relationship, it's important to always come at it like that, come at it from a balanced perspective where you're learning more about how to express love and how to give it, as opposed to always trying to steal it and take it and say, oh, I want everybody to love me. It's all about me, me, me. And the problem is we get so sucked into the me, me, me. And if you have two people in a relationship that are in that dynamic, well, nobody's really going anywhere. And I think that maybe is part of the divorce rate. It really doesn't have anything to do with the concept of a relationship like that. It has more to do with the way people are trained to think about it.
I think, too, a lot of it goes back to the media models that are part of the cultural conditioning. When I was I grew up in a really small town, and growing up, divorce in that time was a scandal. It was considered a tragedy and a scandal, and it was not viewed well. We moved into like the 70s and the 80s, and if you watch media at that time, you'll notice what the TV shows began to model was women's liberation came in, and divorce rates started to go through the roof, and the once so-called nuclear family basically was split, and you then had single households and latchkey children. And yeah, we've talked about all this stuff before, but a lot of the point is that today what you have in the culture is just it's serial polygamy, basically. You just a succession divorce in most social circles, especially in like Hollywood, the entertainment industry, that's just considered a given. You'll have several wives. There was a wow. I've got a guy with a motorcycle. everybody gets to hear it. It's just out there. It's a big ass microphone, man. It pulls up everything. But what was I saying?
The divorce rates and
yeah, the whole culture has been retooled several times to where now it's like there was a quote by a teenage girl on a blog somewhere that I saw, or maybe it was on Facebook, and her desire at the time was to be Justin Bieber's first wife. Now, aside from the silliness of that, for just a minute, bear with me. There was something in that statement that was very telling. She understood that Justin Bieber will have many wives. She just wanted to be the first.
Are we turning into some kind of Middle Eastern thing, you know, polygamy is sort of like in now, except instead of having multiple relationships and wives at the same time and actually maintaining those marriages, you just marry one after the other after the other.
Yeah, exactly. That's
married
what
divorce,
doing.
And married actually, divorce. And what happens to the man who in many cases is the provider through significant successive divorces?
He's broke.
And not only is he broke, but his life work has been sucked away, pun intended. And there's this element here as well when you think about it. What does that do to any children that are in those relationships? I mean, the social services in the state tend to favor the mother. So what you're doing is you're more or less defathering the human race to the Americans in this particular context anyway. And as a result of not having a whole lot of strong male role models in their life, a lot of the kids, this gives rise to this whole single mom phenomenon, which I guess a whole lot of people in politics particularly really like, because it gives them an excuse and somebody to demonize and attack so that they can go after your kids.
Yeah, they definitely don't want the kids to be raised by a family unit. Or a community anymore. There used to be an old saying that it takes a community or a village to raise the child so that they can gain knowledge from multiple sources. But today we're so divided and fractured. I mean, most people don't even talk to their neighbors, let alone even their own families, getting together and having the old, you know, family dinner where everybody sort of breaks down and talks about their day. And, you know, and there's something healthy with having that place that you can go where you can talk and you can share and you can even argue a little bit and then have some fun and, you know, whatever. But that's kind of falling apart because it's not an effective model for the type of society that they're bringing in one bit at a time.
Well, because of the way that law has been written in the West, and that would be all of us who live in the British common law governments, The implication is, when you begin to study contract law, that the state is the owner of your marriage. Basically, marriage with a marriage license is a contract between a man, a woman, and the government. And that's where you get the idea of divorce. I mean, the divorce is something very different now than it was in like biblical times or ancient times, where, again, that was basically putting a wife away, usually because of infidelity. Now it's a matter of convenience, because the state is the overseer of fiduciary responsibilities for the marriage itself, the custodian of the children. That's how family services are brought into this, because in their view, they are the proper legal guardians of the children and of the marriage itself. So you were basically renting your wife and renting your family from the government.
Now, if it's a marriage license, what happens if you're drunk and get pulled over by police? What happens to your driver's license? They take it off you for 6 months. What are they going to do? You know, ban you from being married for 6 months or something like that as punishment for being married while drunk?
Well, then the divorce rate would be like through the roof, man. It'd be, it'd be just like 100%.
I mean, if you have to be that drunk that already for the duration of your marriage, you would assume that the marriage itself is the punishment.
Exactly. Although today I think there's a lot of reasons people might be driven to drink like that, but I mean, who knows? I mean, these licenses and permits, they're a great reflection when you talk to people that don't understand how the system has been set up, to demonstrate that we haven't been granted freedom. We've been granted privileges, and we've been given certain privileges in our own enslavement so that we continue to work within the system and to support the system and to let the money keep flowing up to the top. So basically what we have to do is start creating our own contracts in a way where it doesn't even have to be something that's just written down on some paper. It can be something that is an agreement. And it kind of brings me back to the old, and I talked to my grandfather and some, you know, people from, you know, the old school, and they're telling me about the day when they could literally trust another person with their word. Their word was their bond. And when you look around today, how many people their word is their bond these days? I mean, it's so frivolous. It's like a fast food drive-through in every aspect of our lives. And very few people hold themselves to those kinds of standards. And so what happens is that we're trained to rely on government or any of these other edifices in our society to provide us with these rules and regulations and licenses and permits and everything else so that we feel safe and so that we have no responsibility to, you know, really be in individuals with integrity and with honor and to be bound to our word and to be bound by our own agreements and contracts and currency between each other as human beings. So I think that it's really just about changing the paradigm of how we think about it, and maybe that'll help do something with this whole idea of maybe part of the reason why the divorce rate is so high is because that whole concept is misunderstood and it's not working for people. So it needs to evolve.
Now, in terms of an evolution, what exactly are we heading to here? Now, if anything, are we heading back the way we came? Are we heading to where the father was the provider, the breadwinner, there's homeschooling, and the mother would take care of a lot of that herself, and families together very strong in the community? I mean, like, if anything, it's kind of like the Amish situation. Because do you know how much family violence there is in the Amish communities? None. No reported incidents whatsoever. There's there's no autism, I think, apart from children that have been vaccinated before and then adopted in or were born into toxic chemical grounds or something like that and then adopted in, you know. There's a lot to be said for a lot of these things. It's about sort of like restraint on technology and the food, the purity, the very strong community, everybody working together as one single indivisible unit. Now, would it be possible with modern technology and our abilities and things of that nature to replicate this kind of community spirit in the modern day? not having to restrict access to every bit of news information and everything under the sun, but actually have a fully informed populace that has proper social cohesion to eliminate these difficult problems, this single mother epidemic, more or less the entire New World Order agenda, I guess, because everything that they've done to structure society at this point has meant not to bring us together, but to break us apart and divide us.
I think it's possible, and I think it doesn't have to be that we all go live in mud huts somewhere out in the wilderness with, like, you know, go back to the Stone Age. I think that actually if we were operating in harmony with the environment, in harmony with natural law, in harmony with understanding the true connection and communication and how it should operate between human beings, understanding rights and privileges like real rights, real, true, free rights that you all, you know, we all inherently possess. If we respect that and we understand how to respect that in others, then, you know, we could definitely make it work. I mean, I think the reason why the Amish communities are so successful is because they all share the same values. Now, that doesn't mean the whole human race has to share the same exact values or the same way of looking at things or the same cultural expressions. We should be diverse. We should be completely individually motivated, but at the same time, there is the rest of the community, the rest of the tribe, if you will, that you do have to consider. So there, I guess there's a lot of these things that would bring into this. What was that?
There's a culture, right? New Zealand, for example, we've got a country of like 4 million people here now, about maybe a quarter of that pretty significant are immigrants who've only just come here recently, like they weren't born here. And somebody was telling me the other day about we need to draft them into the New Zealand culture, you know, help them assimilate so that we can all, you know, be New Zealanders together. And somebody said, what culture? Right? And I was just like, whoa, that sounds really cynical, but it's also quite profound. We don't actually have any culture. Right? Does anybody else actually vibe in with this? Like the culture's just kind of dead. It's gone. It's been malnourished for so long that now it can't even support itself, and it just kind of dies off, and it gets replaced with a new culture that somebody else is creating, namely the government. How exactly can we create a culture that makes people want to excel, that helps them to, that encourages them to think freely and creatively, to reject authority whilst at the same time respecting your elders and people that are actually there to help you and what have you. I mean, if you had kids with that kind of motivation who respect you as long as you respect them, who are personally empowered and creative problem solvers.
Well, right, and knowledge, people need to remember that knowledge is the key to freedom and to peace and harmony, because if you look at it, a lot of the places that there's extreme poverty, there's a lot of crime, there's a lot of ignorance there as well, and some of it is generated, obviously, by people that just refuse to, you know, become knowledgeable and to leave that sphere of ignorance, but a lot of it is because of the fact that they're in a real crappy situation that has been, it's basically a product of the system that we all believe in so dearly, right? And what we need to do is think about this as, how are we going to start raising our children now? We're seeing them getting dumber and dumber and dumber and dumber. How is that in any way going to change or assist in getting rid of a lot of the crime and a lot of the so-called disorder that everybody's worried about if we were to move away from these authoritarian models that we rely on? We'd have to start thinking about education and knowledge as being the link to our freedom ultimately. So if you don't know, if the child is not raised with what it is to respect another person's rights and their sovereign space and their right to be who they are and express themselves as they are, and the whole golden rule, you know, treat others as you would have them treat you. And this idea that, you know, do no harm is really the only law that exists. It's just, there's many expressions. There's many ways that you need to educate them on where, you know, how that's applied. But ultimately, we don't need 30 plus thousand laws every year coming in from the government that even the people in Parliament and Congress can't even review before they sign off on them, that are mostly to do with commerce and mostly to do with expansion of the the neo-feudalist model that we're following, you know, every day and we're hurtling towards every day. So for people that are out there that are rejecting the notion of going back to some of these older principles, I think we really got to – that's just a start, is to go back to that. We really got to rethink this, because the direction we're headed is clearly going to be making things worse. If you look at the media, you look at the way that people's minds are molded and their whole – everything, their habitual nature is completely a product. It's a creation. And these corporations actually create that to get, you know, attachment to their products from consumers. They want you to become part of their culture that they're creating. That's why Levi's jeans, they create a whole brand and a feeling and a whole they have like quotations that they quote themselves, you know, Levi jeans. How can Levi jeans quote themselves? I don't understand that. And they create this whole tapestry of just propaganda, ultimately, that is there to pull you outside of you having your own individual culture, if you will, and having some connection to something related to this planet and this environment and the real human beings that are on them. And so if they got everybody invested in these things that are synthetic, that are artificial, that's why we're divided. That's why we're confused. That's why we see depression rates going up, is that we're moving more and more towards synthetic types of things as opposed to organic kinds of things. So I think what we're talking about here is trying to get back to something that is rooted in the human being, that serves our nature, which I believe is actually inherently good. People can argue with me, but I believe we are inherently good. I think that it's just our environment that has a great deal of influence on us. So I think these are some other things we've really got to discuss on that level.
I have a great anecdote, actually. I just posted it up on Facebook the other day. There was a protest in New Zealand about what's it called? Legal highs. Here we are. So we got a whole bunch of people out front of these tattoo parlors and everything that sell these little bags of fake weed and stuff like that. Legal high equals brain fry, no legal highs, it's the lowest of the low, you know, this kind of, you know, freaking out about it. And my question's simple. How many people have been killed by legal highs so far? Zero. How many have been killed by cannabis in 10,000 years? Zero. So why aren't these people out with signs saying, legalize cannabis already? This is getting ridiculous. You know? And I mean, who's the biggest enemy to their mind? People who make fake weed or people who ban real weed and chuck people into jail for possessing it? Right? Somebody else said down here, because I think this goes to your point about how we're substituting natural alternatives for artificial synthetic stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it turns out, like, I was thinking about this just before, gentlemen, about regulation. Exactly how much is too much? And how exactly do you regulate and legislate for morons? You can't.
Well,
you have to educate
systems.
You've
got to let them be morons.
Okay, it's almost like...
You've got to let them be morons.
But there's no point, almost, in making any laws at all anymore, until such a point as you've gotten the population out of just a complete dull stupidity. Right? It's been dumbed down to such an extent.
What created a stupid populace in the first place?
The education, the legislation did. It's a vicious circle.
well, the whole thing goes back to natural law and the fact that I don't want to be cold about this, but stupid people used to not live very long. Stupid people generally didn't prosper, and stupid people bore the burdens of their stupidity. What we have now is a nanny state that has attempted to play to the lowest common denominator. Hence, that which you subsidize, you get more of. The old axiom of basic economics. And we've subsidized stupidity. We've created a nanny state. We've created clients of the state who have no real reason to bring themselves up to the level where they're of a grade of human being who can continue to survive in what is effectively kind of a brutal planet sometimes. you only have to look at what happens during a storm here in the United States to see how stupid people are. I'm supposed to feel sorry for and then subsidize through my taxes and insurance rates the stupidity of wealthy people who live along coastal lands, knowing full well that at least every few years a hurricane's going to come and it might be pretty flipping horrible. Contrast that with people who are made stupid and cannot provide for themselves, cannot work, cannot think, cannot function as rational human beings, and you have the cocktail for a society that is going to be taken over by the controllers. This has been engineered for a very long time.
Well, yeah, and look at what we do with those people now. You could call them. You look at a lot of what's taken place with the homeless populations and whatnot. I'm not saying all homeless people are stupid, by the way. I know a lot of really brilliant people that are homeless that they get stuff thrown at them every day because people assume they're drug addicts and all this kind of stuff. So I am not making a blanket statement there. But there are those areas of society where people are, they're not as intelligent. But at the end of the day, anybody that has even a little bit of intelligence can still be educated to a certain extent.
Maybe intelligence is the wrong word. Maybe just common sense.
Common sense. Well, exactly. But I mean, even the term intelligence, it's really referring to common sense if you think about it, because, you know, intelligence is made up of two words. It's made up of intellect and gents. And of course, the gents is talking more about the intuitive feminine quality, and the intel part is talking more about the masculine logical quality. So when you put the two together, you have intelligence. And so you have people on this planet that are extremely intellectual, that have a lot of technical left brain knowledge, and those people have no problem creating these synthetic vaccines and these plutonium tip warheads and all this kind of stuff, which is intellectually brilliant because they came up with it, they conceived it, they created it, and it makes magnificent on its own right, but it's a horrific technology that is used to obviously harm people. So it's not very intelligent. You know what I mean? So there's sort of that differential. And how do you balance that in a society? I think that honestly, it needs to be set up so that if you are what we're calling, you know, people that maybe are, they don't lean towards intelligence, let's just put it that way. I don't want to insult anybody, but it's clearly something that's there. They should be allowed to live in their situation. They shouldn't be completely rejected, but they also clearly are not going to be elevated to the highest level, but they should be free to be and express what they are, just as anybody should. And right now what we do is, as you were saying, Vinny, the system has created the standard. Here's the standard that we want that's really just centered around making sure you're an efficient worker for the system, because the people at the top, they've just written the entire human race off. They look at the entire human race as completely ignorant, stupid, useless eaters, blah, blah, blah. So they believe automatically that they are superior. We don't need to look at people that maybe suffer from either neurological disorders or whatever, or can't put two and two together properly. We don't need to look at ourselves as superior to them. We just need to look at them as almost like it's like special needs. They're people that have special needs, and they have the right to, you know, have a certain amount of assistance with those special needs. But right now we just throw them out on the street. And they're downtown. I go downtown Toronto. They're all over downtown Toronto. You go to Ottawa. They're all downtown Ottawa. I'm sure in New Zealand and where you are, Randy, it's always there. It's in the central hub because they want them there on display. Just like in the Middle Ages when they were in stocks and throwing tomatoes at these guys, they want them on display because they want them to be the example that you go, oh, man, I don't want to be living like that guy begging for change and sleeping on the street. Okay, so they're there as an example, and it's a fear tactic. But they pretend to care. The system pretends to care, but it doesn't give a shit, ultimately.
Yeah.
Right.
I just got an email.
Ask yourself,
oh, go ahead, Randy.
You ask yourself the question, why? I've thought this when I lived in New York City, and I thought this every time I've gone to Washington, D.C. Why do poor people live in cities? Does this make sense to live in a place that is 30% more expensive to live in? And that has the necessity to deal with municipal authorities. And after a while, you look at it and you go, there's something contrived about this. Well, there is, because most of the Western world went into this socialist state. They built tenements. They built apartment buildings, projects, which is how you wound up with all of these inner city projects in the first place where you had great clusters of people. A city is a cluster of people. It is basically a mini civilization into itself. And anybody that lives in a city or lives near a city knows that that unique culture is something that has in some way been economically influenced. And so we subsidized, again, the ability of people to live in tenement houses in cities rather than saying, you know, for a lot less money, it goes back to the old adage of teach a man to fish and he eats, you know, he can feed himself forever, as opposed to giving him a fish.
But exactly.
One of the things I heard in what you were saying, David, the view of culture, and bear that in mind, because what is culture? It's a petri dish. What are you doing when you have a culture where you're raising something you're attempting to control? A lot of this has to do with viewing of human beings in what could be called an elegant form of slavery as nothing more than economic units. Whether they are active or passive, it's all part of a machine, and it's all a machine that is managed by people at the global level who believe that they're smarter than the rest of humanity and wish to harvest the energy and the efforts of the collective.
I was thinking about the predatory nature of it and how they use people. What you're saying before is about kind of like, I guess, investing in the good in people, right? And one of my listeners said that psychopaths, they're just like people who are having an ongoing tantrum. Maybe if they just meditated and were shown some love and what have you, you know, they'd come right.
Right.
And I go, are you kidding me? Do you know what happens to anybody who's shown love or appreciation or affection or given something to psychopaths? They get used. Their kindness gets used as weakness, and they predatorily use it against you. Every time. It's happened over and over. You know, what this listener was suggesting has been tried a number of times. And guess who comes out on top? Not the person who tried to help the psychopath, by ripping you off or destroying your life in some way.
No, this is nothing more than technological feudalism is what it is.
Oh, exactly. And it's good that you brought up the idea of a psychopath, because we know there's obviously, primary psychopaths that are born and right from cradle to grave, they are psychopaths. They have a brain malfunction or a brain disorder. And then there's what you'd call secondary psychopaths, which are, you know, they've been sort of led into it through situations or traumatic events in their life. And there might be a little bit more hope for them, but, you know, it depends on how far down the road that they go. And what's interesting to me, I was talking to somebody about this the other day, which was that the system itself is built based on a psychopathic model. So who do you think is going to run to the top in a psychopathic system that is founded on a psychopathic model? And this can be proven. You watch that great documentary, The Corporation, where they had psychologists do a psychological analysis on a variety of Fortune 500 companies, and they came out with the diagnosis, yes, they are psychotic, they are exhibiting psychopathic behavior. So we live in a system that actually encourages and supports the psychopaths. So it's going to be the psychopaths that get to the top, because the good, everyday, average, well-meaning individual, ignorant or not ignorant, doesn't matter, you know, the well-meaning soccer moms and all that kind of stuff, they don't have what it takes to compete with the psychopath. Their virtue, in a sense, like you said, Vinny, on the micro level, is used against them. And it's the same thing on the macro level. So the system has been built by psychopaths for psychopaths. So we live in someone else's treehouse that made up these rules that reflect their mentality.
And the American medical – oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to finish up by saying that if you're going to try to apply your virtue onto that template, and that's the biggest curve I find people can't get their head around. They feel that, well, I'm not capable of doing these things. Why would these people do this? Why would the system be so aggressive and so psychotic? Well, that's because you're not a psychopath.
I say that to a lot of that's what I say to people all the time. You know, why would they do that? I just don't understand. Well, if you're a criminal psychopathic scumbag, you would. And you're like, oh, yeah, it would make a whole lot of sense. Oh, yeah. You know, and that's how the world is structured, more or less. I mean, because who writes the structure? It'd be the lawyers, the politicians, all of that. And American Medical Journal actually backs up your case, David, that this is a psychopathic world and mindset that propels psychopaths to the tops, because they did an analysis of particular types of work and things of this nature, where psychopaths tend to cluster, where not caring about other people, doing the wrong thing, lying, sabotaging your competition within the ranks and all of that kind of thing actually helps you get to the top. Being honest and caring and helping others pull them up and everything like that, that actually sabotages your career. These are the industries where they wind up. Law, medicine, business, politics, entertainment, and religion. If you were to look at any of the most influential institutions of our entire society, the things that actually make and govern our society and have it run, would it not be all of those? Right? So it's not just like a coincidence psychopathic thing. Our leaders are psychopathic. Our doctors are psychopathic. Our lawyers are psychopathic. I'm not saying all of them, but I'm saying enough so that they would get to the top and control in a top-down fashion those particular industries without even working for anybody else, without even being part of any secret societies. This happens all on its own, as well as the secret societies and stuff like that, all on top, recruiting the best and the brightest of the psychos, you know? They got us really, really well stitched up.
Yeah, that's perfect, because then that's why the pyramid is a great symbol for people to wrap their heads around when you really just look at the way every institution you just mentioned, Vinny, is structured. And of course, there are people at the top of that pyramid that have more knowledge and knowledge of very particular things. They have knowledge of human psychology in a way that human beings themselves have very little of. They have knowledge of technology, which they themselves have created and work endlessly 24/7 through black projects and all kinds of clandestine activity to harness the forces on this planet in almost the way that you could compare it to a brand of sorcery, if you were to use an old medieval term, as opposed to something that would be more useful to help benefit mankind. Clearly, the system is not there to benefit mankind. Clearly, your government, and you don't need me to pile a bunch of documents on your desk and throw a whole bunch of documentaries at you to prove this. You can judge, you can know them by their actions. You can see that they say one thing and they do another. Trademark psychopathic tendency. And this is the way it's reflected all the way through. So there's levels of compartmentalization all the way up to the top, where you reach the real primary psychopaths that are at the top, and they want to be at the top. They want to structure it because the psychopathic mind loves hierarchy. They love hierarchy as opposed to holarchy, which is holistic. It's it's the Knights of the Round Table ideology. It's the circular spiral-like ideology that's actually modeled after the structure of the universe. So I would actually say for people, our system is not modeled after the structure of the universe, okay? And you should be dictating your thought patterns, your life, based on the way nature functions, based on the Fibonacci sequence, based on the structure of the patterns of nature, based on the way that the galaxy spirals and is moving constantly. And I tell people this as well, is that when your thinking becomes stagnant, look at what happens to water. And I mean, and we're what, 70, 80% water? So it's actually a really good analogy. When water becomes stagnant, it becomes swampy and it becomes polluted easily. But when it's moving, it's constantly flushing and cleansing and it's alive and vibrant and it's transitioning and it's a current, right? Well, if we were to structure our thinking patterns in our society in a way that's flexible, that's adaptive, that's allowing for spontaneity, that's allowing for creativity, that supports those things, then we would see the human race thrive. But no, we have it the other way around. We have the hierarchical psychotic model, and psychopaths love hierarchy. And even good people who aren't psychopaths, they fall for that stuff too, because they've been brainwashed and they've believed the lie given to them by the system that hierarchy will keep you safe. And isn't that the number one sales pitch of every politician, of every party, of every country in history, is that I'm doing this to protect you. Isn't that the number one line they give us?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, it's called the Evil Archy. It's a mixture of evil, the monarchy, and malarkey.
Exactly.
I think just sitting here listening to you talking, because you guys are really good at riffing through, you know, this whole psychopathic New World Order Illuminati thing. Then the next question becomes, how do you change this? Each one of us, as people who are speaking out publicly about this, have a model of our own lives that we constantly hone and refine. And a lot of this means that we are constantly in states of separating from things. How do you get a psychopath out of your life? Well, you get a psychopath out of your life by getting them the hell out of your life. You inoculate yourself. You cut them. Somebody who's married to a psychopathic spouse has no choice. You will not change that spouse. You will not change that relationship. So basically what has to happen is you have to find a way to separate. At the same time, based on the model that we have now, most people are in a codependent relationship with their controllers. They feel like they need them. They feel like they need the police, the military, the banks, the Monsantos. What do we do to move the conversation towards what we would call a new culture? How do we model this new culture?
Well, I could just jump in real quick. Oh, sorry, Vinny. Okay, cool. I just want to say quick, one very important word the entire human race needs to learn ASAP, and it's the word no, okay? And there's two versions of that word, isn't there? It sounds the same when it comes out of your mouth.
Right.
It's N-O, which means no, piss off. I'm not going to take your bullshit anymore, and I'm not your slave, and I'm not your punching bag, and I'm not your emotional dumpster and all that kind of stuff, okay? So no. You need to put your line in the sand, like Gandalf smashing that, you shall not pass. I love that scene. It's the best scene in any movie ever. You got to get used to that mentality. You got to become a warrior in your life. Okay. You have to be empowered. So it takes a strong, brave, courageous person to get acquainted with that first expression of that word, no. The other expression of that word, of course, is K-N-O-W, knowledge. If you have knowledge and you know, you're not in a state of believing or I wonder what I should do, and you're flip-flopping back and forth, then you're prey. You're prey for these psychopaths because they look for weaknesses constantly. That's their mind. Their brain is like a scanner. It's just scanning for weakness constantly. So if you're strong, if you're firm, and you're rooted in knowledge as opposed to ignorance, I'd say that's a good place to start. That's my opinion.
And in order to achieve this, you know, the thing is, we've got our objectives, right? But how to achieve it? I say the New World Order had it really good. They forcibly took children away from their parents and shoved them into public schools. They had a forceful education, and that changed the entire culture from being independent and not appealing to authority to being dependent and appealing to authority. So in one generation, you can change the entire direction of humanity from freedom to pestilence or pestilence to freedom. It's just a question of how exactly you get all of those children. And it has to be kind of like almost not one child excluded sort of thing, indoctrinated to believe that freedom is a good thing, that only appealing to authority and having no evidence to back up your faith in people who claim to have authority over you is a bad thing, which is more or less the opposite of the current education system. So what if education reform, radical education reform, what if the public was still funding this education and everything that doesn't teach anybody anything and just dumbs them the frack down? What if it was completely, utterly changed to something that was actually beneficial? Something that was communal rather than isolated. something that actually incorporated the parents and the children and the teachers and community resources and things of that nature. What if kids were taken on a field trip just to walk around their local town and go into shops and everything like that and ask the shopkeeper what it is that they do and the intricacies of their job to advance their curiosity, their creativity, and their ability to understand the world? You know, there's so many simple things that basic parenting skills that have been lost since the introduction of education that I think could actually be incorporated into it anyway, rather than being educators, we're people who are there that are basically your parents, you know, more or less. We're there to watch out for you. We're there, here to teach you about the threats that you'll face in this world and so on and so forth, so you don't get yourself killed, more or less, including psychopathic scumbags who might be trying to educate you into believing something that's going to wind up getting you killed is a good thing.
Where do I sign, Vinny? Because it's brilliant. I love it. And that's what we exactly need to do. And actually, just a little side note, I'm working with a brilliant woman here in Canada. Her name is Dr. Carmen Bolther. Some of you might have heard of her work. She is actually the director and, you know, featured producer of The Pyramid Code, which is available on Netflix now. And she did a lot of work on Egypt and ancient Egypt and a lot of kinds of work there. But her main project right now, she used to be involved with the Calgary University in Calgary here in Canada. And she is now writing her own curriculum, her own online university, which is called Interactive U. And it is based on what you're talking about, Vinny. It's based on learning, knowledge, having the ability to create. It's all available online. The platform is going to be up soon. And you know what? There's all kinds of great people out there that are putting these kinds of things together. Communal type educational centers that are there to enhance learning and open-mindedness and giving children the tools so that they can go find the answers themselves. See, this is a big thing that's not happening in school, is that the answers are being given to them in a sense where they're like, you need to answer either A or B, or you're either right or you're wrong. I'm going to mark you that you passed or you failed. It's not about knowledge. Isn't like that though. All of us, we're on this journey of knowledge. And I don't know if any of you, you're never going to get it right the first time. And it's a process of continuing growth and study and evolution and, you know, constant movement, right? So we have to base it off of that. We have to change that. So if we can really start there, absolutely. We got to get to the young people, because sometimes I talk to some of the people, and I'm not trying to offend anybody from an older generation or anything, but some people are very, very, you know, strong, and those belief systems are deeply entrenched and calcified in their brain, and it's extremely difficult to get them to change their paradigm.
Yeah, so the Jesuits had it sussed, I think.
Exactly. They knew exactly what they were doing.
Yeah, no, and what if you say you use the tactique of an evil organization like the Jesuits, for example, to brainwash kids into knowing that they're brainwashed, and then just going, "Oh my God, I was totally brainwashed, and now everything else is BS." You know, I'm a fan of inversion. You take whatever is that is totally effed and do the exact opposite, and then you wind up oftentimes with a solution, don't you?
Kind of like when you listen to a politician talk about something, you just hear what they're saying and then know that, well, probably the opposite of that is going to be true.
Yeah, that's the world we live in now. So basically what we could do is we could tell people, look, we're going to forcibly indoctrinate you. We're going to make you appeal to authority and not care about your community or anything like that. And we're going to dumb you down. And also we're totally going to allow all the kids to tease your child and make their life a living hell. Okay. It'll be just like normal school. And they go like, yeah, sign me up. And they go, ha. We're actually going to turn them into some free-thinking kids that are going to be like infected with this brain power, and they're going to like go home and infect their parents with it. Their parents will go like, "Oh my God, I suddenly was realizing. I was wondering today, honey, are we schmucks? Like, are we just like totally retarded?" She's like, "Oh my God, we are totally freaking retarded. Maybe we should do something about that." Well, apparently the best thing to stop yourself from being so freaking retarded is by realizing just how freaking retarded you are.
Maybe it'll work. I don't know, man. Something has to be tried. Something.
I mean, let's just not do nothing. You know, I mean,
yeah.
nothing could be possibly worse than what's happening right now. I mean, like,
even, let's start with that idea and build on it.
I mean, you know, maybe we could have like a whole bunch of them. You know, there could be like a Spartan school or something like that, where you get cast out into the wilderness and expect to fend for yourself for several months at a time or something like that. You either come back or you don't, and then you get a diploma.
Tell them Justin Bieber is going to be their math teacher, and they'll show up in droves, man.
Yeah. Ooh, okay, now, how many babies am I saying now? Oh, baby, baby, baby. Oh, sounds like a golfer caught in my lawnmower.
Oh, man.
No, there's some extraordinary pain and frustration going on right deep at the heart at me that I just want to get out and make jokes about because it'll distract me from just how frustrated and full of pain I really am. And I think this is the same thing that happens with kids, really. You basically go out and you go to school and you get freaking traumatized, you know? School was really traumatic for me, bro. There was this one time when I was 6 or 7 or something. I forget. Real young. And I was at a Catholic school, St. Francis, and I think like about 5, 6, maybe even 8 kids, I can't remember exactly, were like attacking me and shit, and I bit one of them. And that kid who was attacking me went and complained to the principal that I bit them. And so the principal hung a sign around my neck that said dog bite and marched me through the entire school in front of everybody during lunchtime. That sound like cruel and unusual punishment to you? You know?
No, that's shame and humiliation, which is social control. That's actually right. the model. The new model is basically shaming and publicly shunning people who behave in socially unacceptable ways. Here, I mean, look, all you got to do now is light up a cigarette out in public somewhere and you will see this in action, because they've spent the last 30 years not addressing, by the way, an addiction or a health problem, addressing a social issue. Just like when we were talking earlier about cannabis and why this culture is so attuned to a particular agenda. I mean, it's amazing to me how you can shift perceptions in roughly about a generation. And if you just look back on the gay liberation movement, the women's liberation movement, you will see how they push the barometer, for good or for bad. I'm not judging any of this right now. I'm saying that what you're dealing with, especially when you're dealing with an institution like a public school, is basically a social incubator designed to inculcate and install certain programs that are socially acceptable for the agenda at that time. And it shifts from generation to generation.
When they want, the ultimate goal here is obedience. That's what they want. They want people to learn about obedience. And there's just a lot of ways that they do it. And if you disagree with that, just look around, folks. Look around at the people that you interact with on a daily basis. They are not expressing their uniqueness. They're not expressing their own individual ideas. They're not expressing their own creativity.
In fact, they attack you for doing so.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, you need to provide me evidence of all the things that you're saying. I'm like, listen, I'm expressing my uniqueness. What are you doing? You're going and repeating the mainstream line that you've been told. At least, you know, is there anybody out there that's actually these days having an original thought? Like, how did paintings that have never been painted before happen? How did a song that was never written before that inspired entire generations of people, how did that come into being?
These are artists. These are people that are considered either brilliant or insane or some combination of the two. That's actually what a real original artist is. They will be considered insane or eccentric.
Well, I think that was it Marcus Aurelius or someone from a long time ago, anyways, I'm sure many have said it, is that the goal here is to get as far away from this whole, you know, I'm not even quoting the guy now. But it was something to the effect of, you know, getting away from the mainstream thought process, right?
Breaking
like
away
pulling
from
yourself
the herd.
Out of the herd. And you're trying to run from that as fast and as hard as you can. And the people that are part of that herd, they're going to be like, what's wrong with you? You're crazy. You're insane. You're running away from everything that we are, because they identify their entire reality with that with that whole way of being. And these types of artists and these types of brilliant people that have shown their light throughout history, they're the ones that are abused by our culture and by our society, because the majority of the people have been sucked into one form of ultimately mental dictatorship and colonization of the mind, whether it expresses itself on a physical level or not. And there's a variety of ways that that happens. Ultimately, this is about colonization of the mind, because if an intelligent, well-educated, and I really mean educated, like we're talking those logical psychopaths here, if they have knowledge that is more advanced, they can use that as a weapon. Whereas what the real thing is, what these artists are trying to do, you look at these Alex Grays and these people that just they blow people's minds with something that's totally unique.
Yeah.
And they're not tapped into that one iota, but they might seem weird and odd and kind of out there. But that's just because we're surrounded by people that are like-minded.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of colonization. It's more like colonization, like to make you think like an asshole.
Yeah, but somebody shoved their foot up your ass is basically what's happened.
Yeah, I've had my head up my ass for so long. All I can do is think shit.
I want to take a break here. We're going to play some music. Everybody can take a break. Go.
Well, by the way, there's a song to actually illustrate what we were just talking about like smokers and everything else there. Guilty by the Pakehachis. If you download it right there across the Skype and play that, man, it's going to be freaking awesome.
What is it again?
Guilty by the Pakehachis.
Send me a link.
It's in the chat.
It's in the chat. The Skype chat.
I don't know if I can legally play it or not.
You can. We fully originally made it, so I hereby give you copyright permission.
Send me the link on Skype.
You didn't have to sign a copy. You didn't have to sign a copyright agreement and all that.
Yeah, well, I'm always getting banned from YouTube for playing supposedly copyrighted music. Anyway, let's take a break here and do some music. Guys, stay on the line, and we'll be back in a few minutes with Man Talk 6 on Off Planet Radio. We'll be right back. And we're back on Man Talk 6 on Off Planet Radio Live. I'm Randy Moggins with Vinny Eastwood and David Whitehead. And we are continuing the Man Talk experience, which is a rather loose, informal, but nevertheless usually pleasant and always erudite exploration of the consciousness of the entire human race as we represent them. Guys, welcome back for the second round.
Hey, what's up?
I think it would be interesting at this point to kind of go into something that I've wanted to ask each of you, and I'll toss in mine as well. But it has to do with waking up. You know, I think maybe it's useful to share waking up experiences with people, because a lot of people have no idea how painful all of this is. Vinny, I can always tell when Vinny's in pain because he tells more jokes. He does more humor. He does what's reflexive to him in dealing with it. And that's his unique expression of his anger and his pain. But let's kind of go around the round table and share the waking up experience a little bit, because it's useful for people who will hear this, who are like on a threshold or just like walking into this thing of what it's like and what awareness really is. That's good. Great word. Awareness. Let's start with you, David. How did you begin waking up? What was the moment? What was the memory freshest in your mind of when you began to suspect things were not exactly the way they appeared to be, and your own arc into not only waking up, but waking up other people?
Well, I can say that it wasn't just one thing, but I do have many memories, and it reflects the same emotions that definitely were triggered. And for me, I was raised in a very interesting environment and with a very particular brand of a fundamentalist religious ideology that scared the living crap out of me. And I was surrounded by people that were very much miseducating me about the nature of reality and what my mission and my purpose was and who I was supposed to be and what I was supposed to believe. And I didn't know how to translate that. I didn't know how to, because it was my only exposure being a young child was to people who thought like this. I shouldn't say only exposure, but that was the overwhelming influence. And my parents at the time doing what they felt was best. And they've since, you know, I love them dearly and they're amazing. And they listen to my show all the time. They support me wholeheartedly. But at the time they were just going off the information that they had, and they were trying to surround me with only one view and one paradigm, and which was extremely frightening to me. And I think I rejected it right off the bat because inherently, or I guess intuitively rather, it just didn't vibe with me. And it created a great deal of distortion in my mind. And it actually messed me up through my earlier years, my early teens. And of course, adolescence in general is just a tough ride as it is. But trying to navigate that through a lot of various challenges, I found it to be, it was very, very, I was borderline depressed. I was outright depressed. I was diagnosed, of course. My parents took me to the doctor. And of course, they're like, oh, he's bipolar. He has all these mental disorders. He's, you know, expressing all these different things. And I'm just like, look, I'm just confused. And I just need someone to help straighten me out. Like, I really don't know where up is and where down is. And so for me, it was a constant dark night of the soul experience. And I think that what really woke me up was that I was going to have to be the one ultimately to pull myself out of that situation. And what I mean by that is in my own mind, I started to realize that I can't rely on other people to assist me with that problem. That problem was something that was going on within me. And it was something that I needed to go on the journey of correcting and working with. And it took a lot of years of, and part of it was deep investigation. That's what drove me to do comparative religious research and study throughout my whole life, which I continue today. And I very much enjoy doing that. Looking at history and everything else, it's what drove me into martial arts because I didn't have any confidence. So martial arts for me was one way of expressing, you know, you're talking about how Vinny and comedy, that works well for him. For me, it was martial arts. It was a bit of music. And I found that that was a great outlet. So it was a progression thing. And then when I started to see that the world was reflecting this sort of schism in one way or another through what we were being told by government, and I got into the political thing and the media and everything, and I started realizing, oh my God, we're not being told the truth. We're actually being outright lied to. And then 9/11 took place, and I, you know, all of that. And I just started questioning that. And so it's a lot, but it's really that it was extremely painful, as you were talking about, Randy. It was, I remember writhing on the floor in tears beside myself with no solution. I felt like I would rather just die. It really got bad. And this was when I was in my early to mid teens, and it took a while for me to get out of it. And it wasn't one particular thing that got me out of it, but I must say that it was from some of the simplest people actually in my life. Some of the people that maybe didn't have any real deep, profound philosophical things to talk to me about or whatever, but they encouraged me. It was an encouragement. They were like, no, you know, I understand that this is the situation you're in, but you can get out of this. You can do this. And it was just this motivational thing that started changing me, where I got the confidence ultimately to get to a point where I could trust my own reason again, and I could connect with my intuition and get past the programming that was keeping me in a state of fear. And when I got through that, and obviously it's still a journey, but you get through it stage by stage, you just get stronger and stronger. So the only thing I would say to people is while you're going through this process of realizing that there's a lot more to what you're being told and there's a lot more to this life, is that you need to take it in stride, and you got to recognize that it's not something that happens overnight. It's a process, and you just need to work towards that ability to empower yourself so that you have the confidence to go through it, because you can. I would say that if I could do it in the strait that I was in growing up, in the situation I was in, man, I think anybody could do it.
Yeah.
That's the long answer.
Actually, that was kind of a great answer, because it was personal. But again, there's always the trauma aspect to it and how you deal with it. And Vinny, I'll flip it over to you, because your coping mechanism to me is very unique because I don't really have this gift of humor. I mean, I'm occasionally funny, but it's usually not in the way that you do it. You're an engineer of humor as a defensive art or an offensive art.
It is pretty offensive a lot of the time, I must say. The missus doesn't agree with you at all. No, like, seriously. She'd rather... And I mean, because, like, you know how I'm, like, always interjecting jokes and everything during the shows and everything. In real life, that doesn't stop. Trust me, you can really easily get sick of ridiculously lame jokes. I don't know exactly what point it is, but at some point, you begin to hate the jokes. And after a certain other point gets reached, you begin to hate me for telling them.
Well, I think what we should do is maybe in about a year or so, we'll bring your wife on and ask her.
Like what her coping mechanisms are, you know? Like, this is her wake-up story, you know?
How do you contend with this maniac? How do you contend with this man who is constantly on?
Oh, yeah. It's I don't know how she does it. She's got a strength, you know? I've got to say that. You know, I've got a lot of respect for that.
But truthfully... I admire your energy. Actually, both of you, you know, I
admire. Well, people always ask me how I get so much energy, bro. Listen to this. It's not rocket science. Drink large quantities of coffee while on radio.
The real secret is he's permanently wired.
Well, not permanently, just when I'm on air, which... can sometimes take several hours a day. So pretty much daily. And it gets to the point where you get so freaking exhausted and what have you, because you're like high off this caffeine. I actually had to come up with a new term called the caffeined. You know, that's what I am. I'm a fiend for the caffeine. Mm. And anyway, in terms of wake up stories, mine's kind of like a real long one. Like, David tried to give off like a long version of his, and it took like 7 minutes. I did like a 3-hour show one time.
Divulged. It's really hard to, yeah.
Yeah.
How do you contain it?
Well, it's kind of like in stages. Okay. First of all, get hit from my dad as a kid, then get abused by other kids at school. I had a real bad anger problem. They thought I had ADHD, but my mum knew that I just needed a father figure around or what have you after the divorce. So she got a guy around. I stopped being violent. And then I realized that I actually had kind of like the gift of the gab, won a senior speech competition. And I even financed my trip down to university by writing, directing, producing, and financing my own play that was put on at Artworks and Waiheke Island, the little community hall and that kind of thing, and I got enough money to send me down to university after a couple of weekends showing. And when I was down at university, as is normally happens, you start smoking cannabis, you start selling maybe a little bit of weed, and then you get busted by the cops. And then you can't even breathe properly, and you're staggering, and you're like wondering what the hell's happening to you. You later find out that what you were having was a panic attack when the police were cutting off your shoelaces and everything like that before they put you in a cell. You know, you lose your girlfriend of 2 years, a beautiful Japanese girl, and you can't really ever go to her homeland. So you kind of like send her an email in tears, saying, "Honey, you know it's not going to happen. We can't be together if I can never even come to your country, because Japan will never let anybody in with a drug dealing kind of criminal conviction, like, ever." So that's a bit of a pain in the ass there. All of the friends and everything like that you were dropping around smoking weed with and having a good time with and everything like that, you never see them again. They're never your friends. And, you know, your mum gets like 10 grand in debt in order to pay a lawyer just to basically say that, hey, you didn't advise him of his right to remain silent before he gave you the full confession. And then after that, you know, you're living at home and doing your community service, doing a little bit of vineyard work and what have you, riding your bike around. One time I came off the retaining wall at full speed off the bike and then landed on my head on the road a couple of meters shy. had a helmet on, thank goodness, but yeah, mum wouldn't have any of it, so I still had to ride the 15 kilometres to work at a regional park and dig out weeds and everything all day after sustaining that injury. That was fun. you start to realize just how tough you are when you don't have a choice. You know, like your body actually needs to work, therefore it does. It's quite interesting. It doesn't matter what you want to do or what you wish you could do or what you think you can do. If you have to do it, you do it. Isn't that interesting? Apart from the times when, you know, you accidentally break a leg or something like that trying to do a ridiculously awesome high kick. But what happened then is I took mescaline, and I took this trip, and I started to actually think that I could see my future self or whatever, and I started asking it questions, and it gave me a whole heap of advice. One piece of advice was to go back to university in Auckland this time, not a freaking 1,000 clicks away from my family and support network, and get a job as a telesalesman. And I did. I became the number one telesalesman by the end of my two-year tenure. I was like number one top of the board for 6 months. I was making a lot of money. Living at large and what have you. And then I start watching all these people who are like scum, basically, tell me how to do my job and stealing my ideas and not valuing me for them. Basically corporate psychopaths or whatever is what I was dealing with. Job after job after job after job. Freaking run by corporate psychopath boss after corporate psychopath boss after corporate psychopath boss in the telco industry. I couldn't take it. I was getting depressed as hell. I was smoking copious quantities of ganja every single morning before going out to work because I just couldn't handle selling people anything for these freaking psychopaths. I was like in a real bad place. And then I got myself a bonus. I got $11,900 worth of Westfield shopping vouchers and a paycheck of like $4,500 for about a month's work. I was really good at my job, by the way. That was my last ever proper full-time official paycheck, was that amount. And I used that as a justification for going out and getting a video camera, a Mac computer, going out to public protests and meetings and so on and so forth, videoing them, just basically doing it. I always wanted to like make videos and movies and everything like that. Somebody at a party once just said, if you want to do it, just do it. So I did. I got noticed on YouTube by a wonderful man named Mitch Santel, who is producing the American Freedom Report with Dave Von Kleist on American Freedom Radio with Brent Johnson. And then Dave Von Kleist had to leave that show, and they were offering up a co-hosting position. They gave that position to me, and then they decided they didn't like the original host, Brent, so they gave the entire show to me. And it's been going for 4 years now. I'm the only New Zealand-based talk radio show and YouTube channel that's putting up content extraordinarily regularly with 3 hours a day, 5 days a week now. I've expanded to with the talk radio show. You know, interviewed all the big people, George Norrie, David Icke, Jordan Maxwell, the guy from Thrive. All sorts of...
Foster Gamble.
Yeah. Alan Watt and all these other wonderful
Rick
people. Yeah, Rick Simpson, I've had him on a number of times. He and I were just cracking up so hard the last interview together. And I found out my place, my purpose. It's because I've been through like so much crap, and believe you me, I've given you the short version. We all do give the short versions of the crap shit that happens to us. but you have to learn to deal with it, because that experience isn't going to go away. It's going to be there in the back of your mind reminding you every single day, right? Of how harsh life can be and how awesome it is now that you've got it, even if it's not really that great. And even if you're still piling on all these layers of neuroses and things of this nature as you overcompensate and make excuses for your atrocious behavior in order to escape these things that you're having to deal with. For me, I've decided to use that energy instead to give people a little bit of reprieve. Because whenever you're talking about incredibly serious topics, things that really destroy your life, it's not easy to deal with, and it actually hurts just to listen to. You have a look at just how many social workers and everything need their own caseworkers or psychologists and things like that to counsel them, because just hearing about people's pain causes you pain. And there's so many of these activists and people who've been shafted by the system, left, right, and freaking center. And it's just nobody's like bringing them on and saying, hey, just tell us about yourself and let's have a few laughs. You know, nobody was doing that. I wonder why. Because that's how they normally would talk to people. If they've seen that with somebody in a cafe that's of like mind, they just sit there and they have a couple of drinks and they have a few laughs and they tell each other stories. They're very interested to listen, very interested to talk as well and elaborate and question and shoot the breeze. You know, that's what I thought was really needed in this entire truth movement. We've got all the information, we've got all the fear-mongering, we've got all the researchers, investigative journalists, all the serious stuff's been taken care of by very, very talented people who are way better at researching than me. But I can make shitty puns. Huh? And keep up with the conversation with some of the most educated people in the world. I can make them laugh. I can make them smile. I can actually make them enjoy their life, despite all the shit that's coming down and raining down upon them daily. I can help them to see through the veil a little bit to help them realize that if you can laugh, you can prevent yourself from going fucking crazy.
That's awesome.
And actually, what you do when you interview is you actually allow people to be themselves, to relax enough to bring all of that out in what is perceived as a safe atmosphere. Because it is deep, dark shit that we're dealing with a lot of times. I wish I could air some of the phone conversations I've had with people, the emails that I get from people, because I deal in largely two areas for the most part. I mean, I do the politics, the economics, and stuff like that, but I deal with UFO abductions and mind control people, specifically coming out of Black Projects. And what I've learned in the last 10 years about some of the things that have been done to people makes my relatively middle-class, white-bread American life seem like a feather bed. At the same time, I don't have your gift of humor, but what I do is I kind of embrace people at the level that they feel safe, which a lot of times is what people really need. They need to be affirmed. They need to feel safe. They need to feel like it's not going to be reprisal for telling you things that sound incredibly insane on the surface of it. You know, a friend of mine who's a researcher and a moderator for David Icke signs her emails with the tagline that says, "I will believe you." Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to believe bullshit, and there are people that will bring you bullshit, but I'm talking about some of the darkest stuff that sometimes it takes me days to get it out of my head, if I can get it out of my head at all. So, you know, there's different approaches to all of this, the waking up, the dealing with the trauma that the world's in, because the whole planet's been traumatized, and that's what makes me ache. I'll just share this. I began waking up really young. There's a lot of things I already knew when I was a kid. And part of it was that we lived in a time that was decisive for humanity. And to explain how I know that or how I felt that is in itself a whole long thing. But suffice to say that when I was about 10 or 11 years old, the Vietnam War we were in the last days of it. But they drafted people for the Vietnam War. And there was a guy who lived in my town. I lived in a very small town. This guy's name was Tucker. He was 6 foot tall. He was redhead, curly hair, freckled, very good looking guy, an athlete, the kind of guy that could pull off wearing a varsity jacket. Now, in those days here in America, the evening news was a centerpiece of the media parade that you got. We only had three networks in those days, and it was in black and white. Every night, the ritual was the news came on, and you watched the war. And I remember looking at that then and thinking, this is so wrong. There's something wrong with this. My father was a Korean War veteran and fully supported anything that the military did. It was like carte blanche. I grew up around, like you, David, kind of conservative religious in a way, but very conservative, staunch Americans who believed America could do no wrong. And I watched this war, and then I watched this guy that I admired go off to Vietnam, and he did not come back. And so 10, 11 years old, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, you know what? This is real. This eats people. The system eats people. And I remember honestly just sitting for hours contemplating what that meant exactly, because conceptually in the mind of, you know, a child, basically, how do you baseline the idea that you can take somebody, pluck them out of their life, tell them they have to go into another country on the other side of the world and fight an enemy that they've never faced before and lay down their life for something as abstract as a nation? And so that was kind of the beginning seeds of all of this. When I was probably about 17 years old, I met somebody who spent a day regaling me about Freemasonry and what we now call the New World Order, the Illuminati. Basically, it was the talk that went, this is how it really is. This is how the world works. I went out into the world and tried to make a living and basically failed at just about everything I've ever done, and realized that it wasn't because I didn't work hard and I wasn't smart and I wasn't lazy. When I was in a sales job, I realized that there were deals being made. This was corporate level sales, and there were deals that were made behind your back and under the table that pretty much guaranteed that your competitor going in the door, who was doing the handshake at the lodge, was going to get the business. The rest of it was just a show to pretend that we had a competitive, quote, free enterprise system. And so I went down that road. I went down the spiritual road as well, the horrible realization that religion made no sense. The religion I was raised with, which was pretty much, you know, conservative fundamentalist Christianity, was just insane. That you read the Old Testament and the Bible and you go, this God's a murderer. You know, this guy wants people sacrificed. He wants you to pillage and loot and rape and steal and destroy. And yet he claims that he's the creator of the human race. And that was a dark road that I went down for 10 years. And this happened after I had been ordained as a minister. So imagine my surprise to find myself about 5 years ago detoxing from religion and realizing just what kind of deep shit this world is in, and watching it spiral out of control after 9/11 with the Patriot Act here in the United States, and seeing how all of a sudden the world was getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And the pain really doesn't go away until you find a place inside of yourself that's peaceful. And I had never learned that. I had externalized everything my whole life, my traumas, my fears, my pains, my rage. As people who are close to me would know, I was very angry. And it takes a long time to figure out what makes you so angry that you are basically making people around you's lives miserable as well. And so for me, it was putting the pieces together where, how do you have peace in a world where there's no peace? And the answer is, the kingdom is within you, and that's where your peaceful space is. So that's kind of real, real Cliff Notes version of where I'm at in terms of my own waking up and walking out into the world as somebody who can warn people about what's going on.
So that they can, so that they too can have their life destroyed.
Yes, basically.
Have you noticed that that's exactly what we're doing to people? And in fact, we're doing it to ourselves. It's like we're breaking ourselves down so we can rebuild it from the ground up, you know? And it's not an easy process. I mean, I actually warned a friend of mine, like, he didn't even know fluoride was bad for him kind of thing, you know? And I warned him, bro, if you actually want to start looking into this stuff, all right, it's gonna cost you, all right? It's going to cost you a lot of your friendships. a lot of the relationship that you have with your families, strained though they may be already, you know, you don't have any idea what happens when you become a conspiracy theorist. It's even worse than being a smoker. Seriously, you get treated like a leper if you're a smoker.
I know. I have people this day, because I'm compulsive, there's a point where I'll humor people in their illusions, and there's a point where I will just open my mouth and it will come out. And when I'm done, they'll look at you and they'll go, "Oh my God." I remember explaining the income tax system to a coworker one day, because I was having problems with the revenue people, and he seemed to think that I was a criminal. And I went, "Well, no, not really. I mean, there really isn't actually a law that requires us to do this." And he looked at me and I said, "Would you want to know the truth about this?" I said, "Because quite frankly, everybody that's filled out tax forms and signed it under penalty of perjury is a liar, because you've never read the frickin' law." I read the law. I analyzed the law. When I finished the conversation, an hour and 30 minutes later, this person was white as a sheet and totally amazed that I was able to spew all of this out, how the tax system in America worked and why it was not compulsory under law. It was actually voluntary, but they tell you it's voluntary, but if you don't volunteer, they're going to take your money and put you in jail. So these are the kind of things that are painful, because you go, did I really win one there or did I just lose it? I mean, there's kind of the gentle way to do it, and sometimes it's hard and fast, and I don't know which is better sometimes.
Oh, I hear you, man. And I just wanted to say, just listening to both of you open up your personal story in that way, that I commend you both, and I feel very connected to both of the situations. And I like this type of radio. I like honest, open, real people discussing these things. And that's what people need to understand, is that these people like us that are questioning the status quo and that are investigating the true nature of reality and what's really going on, we're real people. We're not crazy. We're not insane. We're trying to figure out what's going on here, and we have a deep caring for our fellow humanity and what's going
on
in the world,
David.
The direction. Well, I do, okay? And I think that at the end of the day, we're all here trying to do the same thing. And there was something interesting that I noticed, was that, Randy, you were discussing how you were saying that, you know, Vinny has his talent with, you know, humor and going and expressing himself through that, and then you have brought forward what you feel is your talent, and of course I work with what I feel are my gifts. And what's interesting about this is that none of this kind of discussion is ever discussed really in school or in a job, or if anything, they want to use your talents in a job, so they're like, "Oh yeah, no, that guy's good, he's going to make us a lot of money in that area," right? Whereas this is just contribution to a body of knowledge, and what we're doing is contributing our energy in our own unique way. And anybody that's listening that feels like they don't have a voice and they couldn't do what we do, man, we're just like you. We're regular people. I'm a father. I'm a husband. I run a business. I have a house. I don't have a lot of money, and I live my life. And I live in Canada. That's it. That's who I am. No, I don't have any PhDs. I don't have any fancy letters after my name. But I've done a great deal of study and research, and it brings me to a point that I'm sure both of you resonate with, which is this whole thing about credibility. Here we are. You know, Randy, you're sharing with somebody the truth about the tax system. And Vinny, I'm sure you and I talk to people on a daily basis about some of these issues to one extent or the other. But what is the thing that really separates it? People will listen to what you're saying and go, "Well, you know what? You're just you, and you don't have any expertise in the field, because you haven't been given an official accolade by the system to recognize your research. So therefore, you're not credible. And that's why everything you say is wrong." Not, "Let's talk about the actual information. Let's look at the evidence. Let's, you know, correlate with the actual experts that have documented this." No, it's just about no credibility whatsoever. And these are the people challenging your argument. And the people doing that, they haven't even done 5 seconds of research into this.
The stupidest people in the world, with rare exceptions, are credentialed experts, people with lots of degrees who have spent years in academia studying subjects. Now, there are exceptions to that, and there are brilliant exceptions to that, and I've met them and I've interviewed them, as have both of you. But in the mainstream, the most dangerous people out there, and Vinny, you ticked the list off at the beginning of the show, are these professionals, the people who are credentialed, licensed, and basically considered to be the so-called experts on things. They are mainstream. They're stagnant. They are completely entrenched in a mindset that's not fluid or flexible anymore. And quite frankly, internally, many of them are soul dead, in my opinion.
Yeah, they only have the intellect. They don't have the gents part of that. They just have the
intellect. Well, they have rote memorization, which is basically what education is. You can be very good at spewing out facts. I mean, I'm very good at memorizing things. Mm. But at the end of the day, that's heartless. I'd much rather sit here and have this kind of conversation than to sit down and be regaled by some expert on facts and figures. I find it dull and boring.
It's not interactive.
No, it's not interactive because it's not at your level. It's not at a level you can attain.
Well, that's because they're insane, bro, all right? That's why I call them academia nuts. You know, see, personally, I can never lose credibility. You know why? Because I never claim to have any. I do claim, however, to be absolutely incredible.
Exactly. And everybody else out there that's listening should know that they are the same.
Yeah, in their own way. And that's the thing. None of us have any credibility. None of us have any credibility except those who claim that we have it. But if we claim that we have it, we can lose it if we mess up. All right. So as I claim to have no credibility whatsoever, nothing I say might be 100% backed up by evidence that I've totally gone down into like some deep archive in the Pentagon papers or something, like shuffled it through with a flashlight or something like that. No, I don't really have any first-hand knowledge. I'm in freaking New Zealand, bro. What the hell happens in New Zealand? Nothing. All right. And this is how most people learn, actually. It's like, have you ever played the game Chinese Whispers? You whisper something in one person's ear and they have to try and repeat it to the next person. As you go around a circle, you wind up losing the message completely, and it winds up changing into something completely different. And I'm cognizant of that I'm listening to all of these different radio sources, listening to all of these activists and people from all over the place. I don't know if what they're telling me is 100% the truth. I haven't looked at the evidence entirely, haven't looked at any of the documentation. So what I have to do is argue from a point of humble ignorance. You know, I realize I don't really know anything. However, this bit here doesn't make sense. To start questioning, and the way I contribute to deeper research is certain things occur to me in a simplistic way that don't occur to other people. I'm capable of summing up complex ideas in a very short space of time using only a few words. It's one of my gifts. I'm good at naming things as well. It's wordsmithing. It's what I do. And invariably, you will have many people who have a meta-understanding of one particular subject matter, something that is so incredibly complex and diverse that it's really taken one person's entire life, more or less, to study into it deeply enough to have a profound understanding. I can accumulate and relay that profound understanding in a matter of hours to a listening audience. That's the contribution that I give. I don't say that everything that this person is telling the truth, but whatever the truth of whatever they're saying is, sure enough, you'll get it out of them by making them feel like they're having a bit of fun. And this is a profound lesson to me as a truther, because I'm very, very angry all the time about nothing and about everything simultaneously. Do you have any idea how infuriating that is? Not knowing what it is that's really pissing you off? The thing that was really, really pissing all of us off, really, at the end of the day, at that point, was we were so angry that we weren't contributing to solving the problems that were pissing us off. Really, once you start doing something, once you start changing something, once you can see results of your work and you can see community starting to flourish because of your ideas, because of how much assistance you've provided to your community over the years, as I have with my videography and everything like that. I'm unmatched, unparalleled, and there is a residual effect of what I have done and changed in this country. I'm the first person to ever do something like this, to like fully go out independent, no corporate sponsorship, no nothing, and just cover what the activists and everything are saying that the news never lets them do. You know,
whereas me, on the other hand.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
That's a whole conversation in itself. I mean, I would be fascinated to hear that whole story. I mean, how you did that. Well, we know how you did it mechanically, but the internals of that are pretty profound, because you definitely are succeeding in breaking out of the stagnant malaise of media by doing what you're doing. You break the paradigm, dude.
Yeah, I totally do. And I talk to some mainstream media people on occasion. A lot of them really hate me and they think that I'm crazy. It's because they've been brainwashed by an insane system, of course. But, you know, you can't hold that against them. Well, actually, I can, and I do. I don't know how much, like, my hate gives me strength, basically. I wouldn't be able to do alternative media 5 days a week, or even six or seven sometimes, and go out and lead protests and do all of this stuff if I didn't really, really hate the mainstream media. Like, I hate them so much that it gives me angelic strength. You know, like the power of Zeus itself has been energized into my veins. I hate the media so much. They're with their douchebaggery, their scumbaggery, and their various other forms of baggery. It's quite satisfying to know that you can go out there with minimal effort. It only takes you a few hours to interview somebody, then publish an interview up, to know that you've done a 1,000 times better job than a mainstream media 90-second report or 5-minute interview with one of these activist people, right? And you get the fullness of understanding of where they're coming from, who they are, and what they're doing, and precisely what it is that they're exposing. And I think this is a man quality. A man looks at a problem and just goes, bugger it, everybody else is doing, I don't care. I'm going to go out and solve this one. You know? And the wife will be at you, honey, you know, you're not bringing in enough money. We're never going to survive like this. Don't worry, woman. I'm a man. I'll work it out. Man provide. It's precisely what happens. You go out there and you start doing that. You start contributing to a better society as a good male role model should. Because I had to accumulate male role models myself because I didn't really have one of my dad to a large degree. Yeah, kind of left when I was 10. I only really saw him maybe once or twice a year if I was lucky for the following 17 years, and then he died. So what you going to do? You're going to have to accumulate lots of other male role models, don't you? Like we were saying, the village has to raise a child. I woke up cognizant that there was no village, so I had to build one. I had to build a community village among activists and professionals and things of this nature all over the city and all over the country and all over the frickin' world and in so many different nations that have now become my kind of like global conscience emotional support network. Like, seriously, you should see whenever I type a I'm depressed or something post on Facebook, all of a sudden there's like
I've seen those.
Just the seething mass of people struggling down, on Danny. Top of each other to come and help me. Like, not Billy, if he down, got it. Well, I think it's
take
because
the rope off your neck.
Yeah. I think it's because because I make jokes and stuff like that about all of this type of really scary material that often just basically either makes us angry or makes us afraid or something like that, that people have become dependent on it to a degree. Like, if you find out that weed really works for your glaucoma or something like that, you become dependent on weed for a good reason, because it's nourishing and it helps to fight the disease.
I view it as a
preventative. Yeah. It needs to be prevented daily.
About myself there.
Well, no, but it's good because we all have to you know, at the end of the day, be sane to some degree, but be aware and then still continue living and trying to express those feelings in a way that is constructive as opposed to destructive and going around and, you know, punching walls or whatever it is that instinctually you want to do when you hear about some of this stuff. But, you know, it's like that old saying, the truth is going to basically piss you off. It's not something that's always going to be a bunch of flowers and rose petals. It's going to be something like that that happens. But there's a process. That's where you start. And then you find a way to – you find a coping mechanism to rely on for the first bit. And then you grow in knowledge. And for me, what I had to do was I had to go out and go through the process of trying to validate all of this. And I went through just so many sleepless nights. Reading through extensive documentation and books and watching documentaries and doing that process that we've all done. Yep. And, you know, I found a little bit of comfort in the fact that at least I was starting to gain an understanding. So even if I didn't like the total analysis at the end of the day that I was forced to accept, after a while, you just realize, wow, it's really a lot bigger than we could even imagine. But you start to, through the process of learning and seeking further into it, for me, that was part of the stress reliever, was to absorb myself in it in a certain extent, and not for the purpose of trying to become sadistic or something, but for the purpose of trying to educate. And by having knowledge, I felt that the fear of it wasn't so insane. It wasn't so overwhelming, because I think that fear, true fear, comes from a place of not knowing. It becomes more of a fear of the unknown. And so I think that when you get past that point and then you find encouragement and support with other people around you, that's the next stage. And then the stage after that for me was when I started actually joining this sort of movement or resistance, or just my contribution to this time in which we all live, and just putting my voice out there and letting my voice be heard. And I encourage everybody. You don't have to get up on a radio show and do it. Find your way to do it. Some people will express it through writing music. Some people will create amazing jokes. Some people will, I don't know, do some crocheting or something.
Design websites. Find
design websites. Yeah, exactly.
God, I could use a website developer right now.
Yeah. Well, it's like the opposite complex I was telling you about. I mean, just think for a moment. And exactly how many ways is the New World Order currently, right at this very moment, messing with you? And the answer has been pretty much every conceivable way. Okay, well, then you can fight back against it in any way you want. You pick any issue. Pick any issue, just one, to start with, and then you start working away at it. Either you need to educate yourself and then come up with a plan. I mean, what was the thing I said to one of my listeners the other day? Oh, yeah. And she, Vinny, what do you do with all this information once you got it? I go, well, being informed is the first step. Learning how to cope with being informed is the second step. Because once you realize what the hell is going on, it's really scary. And it messes you, and it messes your life up, as I said.
Well, and you can't unknow something once you know it. That's the hard part. There's things I wish I didn't know.
Yeah. You can't close Pandora's box again, as it were. And the third step is figuring out how you personally can make a difference. And then the last step is actually going ahead and making that difference.
Yeah, don't just sit around and let this just seep into you and destroy you. Like, you can, knowledge is power, and it has the power to go one way or the other. When you start putting that knowledge into action, that's a incredible thing, and you will really start to realize that this ultimately is a spiritual journey. And if that word spiritual frightens you because you're not, you know, you're not sure what we mean by that, you know, just think of it as a term of, you know, you're expanding your awareness, you're expanding your pride, you're going inside, you're dealing with all those emotions, you're learning how to express yourself, you're pulling yourself out of your own shackles in a way. And by having the system and the way the world is structured as sort of a template for this inner journey that we all have to go through to get rid of the inner tyrants and the inner New World Order or whatever, you start to realize that you're on a macro scale, and it's just at one end of the scale that might be different than another end of the scale, and it reflects itself in a different way. So it's an opportunity. I think it's an opportunity on an individual level, and it's also an opportunity on the collective level as well. And we really are in the time that's quite exciting. And even though some of it seems kind of dark, you just know that there's millions of people around the world that are they're working towards trying to come up with viable solutions, and they're doing a great job at it. And it's just going to get better. And that ball is just going to keep rolling higher. I'm actually encouraged by a lot of the young people that I meet, and how sharp they are, and how aware they are, and how passionate they are, and creative, and how they understand this way faster than when you're trying to talk to somebody that's been indoctrinated by the system for too long. So I have hope in the future, and I'm honestly just you start to feel proud. You start to feel encouraged to just be partaking in this time in history, because if you look back in history, it's been very dark for a long time, and our forefathers have had to fight their battles. This is just the battle that we have to fight, and it's a challenge. And there's a great quote by Carlos Castaneda that I have hanging up in my martial arts dojo, and it's basically talking about the difference between the average person and a warrior. And it's saying that the average person views all of these challenges as exactly that, a challenge that you have to hurdle, whereas the warrior looks at these challenges as an opportunity, as something that's exciting, as something that's mysterious, as something that is to be taken head on as an adventure. And so you basically just have to format a very individual expression of how you're going to take this on, and then it becomes an exciting journey.
It does. And I think people don't realize as well that you don't need anybody's help to start this journey. Usually you need help along the way. You know, like, have you ever seen that happen? You really want to do something, and you go out and you're like, hey, man, do you want to help me start with this website or that radio show or do this or that and the other? And the other person's like, yeah, I guess I will or whatever. And then eventually they tire of it and they bugger off and they leave you in the lurch, you know? At the end of the day, you don't need anybody's help to begin, all right? And in a lot of cases, little things. The more you can do by yourself with greater efficiency and what have you, the better. You know, you don't become dependent as a result of that kind of activity.
I think of what we're doing here. I just got this metaphor. In a lot of ways, what we're doing is we're kind of a net. We catch people in this wave, which David was talking about. And it is dark, but at the same time, there's a lot of hope out there. I get regularly buoyed in optimism by the people that I talk to and looking around and seeing that, yes, the world is changing. But the way we're doing this is we're interlocked with threads. We are threads that come together at crucial junctures and create this net. And in that net flow people who some swim away, some don't get caught up in it, but in a way, what's happening is we're responsible, each one of us, for some small part of the mission. During the time that I was sick, there was about a month where I was very sick, and I seriously considered whether I was going to do this again. It was like, okay, you know, I feel like crap. I've got needles stuck in me. I'm kind of at my low ebb. What do I want to do with the rest of my life? And I went through several weeks of deep, intensive soul searching where I was like, I don't know if I'm going to do this anymore. And I reached a point at the end of the process where I went, you know, I can't imagine not doing this. I actually frickin' enjoy it. I enjoy the dark side of it because it gives me an impetus to keep going. And I get the joy when I see the glimmer of light at the end of some very dark tunnels. And I think that the three of us are kind of a symbol of a greater net that's out there all the time, and it's constantly reforming itself, and people drop off and there are shifts and changes. But at the end of the day, it's something that's working. We can't trust major media. We can't allow governments and lawyers and doctors and the medical establishment and the food industry anymore to tell us who we are and what we're going to consume. We have to become producers. And when we become producers, we begin to take a little bit of our power back as a result of that. And that's kind of the synergy that I see symbolized by what the three of us are doing.
Yeah, I agree. That's it's well said. And I'm I'm just honored to be a part of it and contribute what I can. I don't think any of us would say that, like Vinny was saying earlier, that we have all the answers, we know it all, and we're perfect and all that. That's not at all what's going on here, of course, because we don't work for the mainstream media. We actually are honest in our approach here, and we are seeking truth. And I think that the old maxim applies where, you know, ask the person that's seeking truth, not the person that's found it and is trying to pound it up in your face. You got to have an open mind. And once you start applying your creativity and really thinking outside the box, you'd be surprised the type of journey that you can go on. I found my life has become incredibly synchronistic. I've met incredible people. I've interacted with people all around the world. The energy is just it's amazing. Yeah. And it's actually culminated into something I was going to let you guys know about that we're doing here in Canada. We're doing something. It's myself and my partner, Chris Rusak, and we're basically on the same track as everything we've been talking about tonight. And we're thinking, what can we do in Canada that can really help bring some awareness to this type of information? So we came up with the concept of doing a road trip. So we're basically going to be hitting up 11 cities this spring.
I saw that.
In a couple months. Yeah. And we're doing, it's called the Modern Knowledge Tour of Canada. And people can check it out at modernknowledge2014.com. And we're featuring an incredible cast of speakers. We're bringing Richard Dolan and Michael Tellinger on the road with us. We're going to be going in a Winnebago across Canada. Should be fun. And then we're featuring and meeting people all over the country at these various stops. We've got people Skyping in from all over the world, you know, like Santos Bonacci, Giara Griffin, Michael Tessarian, Dr. Carmen Bolter is going to be meeting us in Vancouver. We've got it's a credible cast of people you can check out. And they have a variety of information to share on a lot of different subjects. And a lot of these people have been on your show, Vinny, and probably yours as well, Randy. And I think that in Canada, it's an overdue thing where we're creating awareness. And I'm excited about it because I feel like I'm actually doing something with the knowledge and getting out there and talking about it. And the format that we're trying to create is just an open-minded discussion, interaction. We want to hear what people in Canada think. We want to hear their opinion. It's not just someone up on a stage pointing a finger and doing all the talking. It's going to be very interactive, very informative, very cutting edge. We're also going to have an online subscription for the tour that people from anywhere around the world can get involved with, where we're going to have exclusive live stream interviews. We're live streaming all the Skype in calls. We're going to be providing all kinds of exclusive content. So we got a really good team of people that are really helping us out. And this is just for us. It's a good place to start. Just get out there and get the conversation off Facebook for a while and get into a room, feel people's energy, look them in the eyes, and really have a conversation about our reality and where we're headed and what we can do about it.
I met both Rich and Michael Tellinger out at in Colorado when I was out at the Global BEM meeting in October, and you're going to have an amazing time. The two of them together in any room is just dynamite. I watched both of them blow away rooms of people when they were speaking. That's a pretty amazing project that you've got going on. Give your website out as well, David.
Yeah, it's modernknowledge2014.com. People can check it out there. We've got all kinds of stuff on there for people to view, and we're real excited about it. It's completely – we're hoping that the call gets answered. We're putting it out there. My partner and I, Chris, we're funding the whole thing ourselves and just trying to put it piece by piece and get all the venues booked and get all the speakers booked and all that kind of stuff. But we're getting an amazing response. And people here, I think, are ready. I think Canada's a sleeping giant. I think people are really going to start to see how awake people are here in this country. And I think if people can think of ways to do things like this, doesn't have to be this exactly, but just get out there and talk to people. That's what the whole goal is, isn't it? We're just all having a global conversation about rethinking where we're at and getting out there and connecting with people on these very important issues that affect us all. So I don't know. I think it's just a great place to start, and I'm just super pumped about it. I can't wait.
Vinny, tell us about what you got going on as well.
Well, just preliminary stages. Have you ever heard of Ian Wishart? No, he's from New Zealand. He's kind of like the I don't know. I guess Walter Cronkite of New Zealand back in the day, I guess. He was the host of the Sunday program here, which is our equivalent of 60 Minutes kind of thing.
Okay.
Real good.
Oh,
working.
Okay.
Just wrote this book, Totalitaria, that's gone bestseller, and he was on George Norrie about it. And I've just been in a conversation with him. He's going to let me narrate the audiobook, and then we'll see where we go from there. It'll be the first audio book I've ever read out. So yeah, it'll be good because I don't like to read, and to be honest, I haven't actually read the book yet. But I know that it's written by Ian Wishart, so it's bound to be. And judging from what I've read so far of it, so it'll actually be it'll hit a double whammy. So I'll get to both read the book. The first book that I've read in God knows how many years.
So we're going to be witnessing Vinny's mind explosions as he goes through. Be like, "Whoa,
this is
my
a
God.
Great gig, though. This is actually
shit,
a gig
really?
I'd like to get." Yeah, this is no. You're gonna. It's gonna be awesome. You're gonna win.
It'll be professionally
reading a
done.
Book is quite a project.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, it'll be professionally done. I mean, I've already done the prologue for it and sent it to Ian as a sample, and he just says, "Yeah, let's go ahead and proceed with it and see what we can do." You know, and we don't know what we're gonna do with it. It's kind of like a tuxedo. You know, you never think to yourself, "Man, I don't have any occasion to wear a tuxedo," but once you got one, you find an occasion, don't you?
Vinny, you sent me this clip a while ago. What did you want me to do with this?
I wanted to play it.
It's 78 minutes and 17 seconds long.
Are you kidding me?
No.
No. That's a completely different link, bro.
Okay. All right. Well,
that's a documentary. It's further down, bro. It's further down.
I downloaded the whole thing, so.
Oh, my God, bro.
Oh, we've got, if nothing else, we've got really good bandwidth.
Well, there's just a link to the actual song. I uploaded it while we were over the break, so you could just, you know, click the link and play it right away.
Well, I screwed up, so sorry. I'm basically massively ADD, so no Ritalin required, but some medication will be provided.
I was actually given a... ADHD test one time, and also a brochure. On the brochure, it had all these little symptoms of ADHD, like high energy, creativity, inability to sit still, get bored easily, and all of that kind of thing, and wanting to have things your own way. And then when I was in business school, I think in Business 101, they had a slide up with exactly those same attributes on the slide. You know what they were describing? An entrepreneur.
Yeah.
The system wants to drug all the entrepreneurs so that we're much easier to control. That was my conclusion. Maybe I'm wrong, you know.
No, I don't think you're wrong about that at all.
I just assume scumbaggery.
Anyway, I think we need to wrap this puppy up, and I want to thank both of you for coming on. I don't have anything nearly as exciting as narrating an audiobook or doing a road tour of Canada. Trust me,
I should just give a link to my website as well.
TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com.
That's Vinny with two N's and a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood doesn't go ahead, make my news. And also my YouTube channel, Vincent Eastwood, or Mr. News, MR News, Guerrilla Media. That's guerrilla, like a soldier, not like an ape. And it's only got one R, like a pirate.
Well, I'm Randy Moggins. I'm at offplanetradio.com, and I'm going to continue talking until either I run out of breath or somebody shuts me up, and it's not going to be easy. This has been Off Planet Radio and the Man Talk 6. We'll be back again. That's a threat. We'll see you very soon.